This is Unleashing Your Great Work, a podcast about doing the work that matters the most to you. I'm Dr. Amanda Kroll, a cognitive psychologist and the author of the book, Great Work. Every week on this podcast, we make bold plans and we take small steps, all so we can build a life that's powered by your great work. Welcome, everybody, to Unleashing Your Great Work. Today, I'm so excited to have Julie Ellis. She, in her early 30s, Julie was no longer waking up enthusiastic for the workday ahead. She knew she needed a change from her corporate career. She dreamt her own big, gorgeous goals. And with that clarity, she co-founded Mabel's Labels, making personalized labels for all of the stuff kids lose as they go out into the world. The business grew wildly, and Julie became an award-winning entrepreneur, eventually selling that business to an industry giant. Since then, Julie has written the book, Big Gorgeous Goals, which came out on June 3rd, the exact same date as mine, and we joke all the time about how we have book twins. Now, 3 years later, our book twins are all grown up, and she's here on Unleashing Your Great Work. Thank you for coming to the podcast again, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me. I love our conversations and I'm excited to chat today.
Yay, me too. So Julie is here for one of our special collaboration episodes of the podcast in support of the second edition of Great Work that's coming out. But before we dive into collaboration, because we collaborate all the time, I would love just to hear a little bit about how you would frame your great work these days.
I have become very interested in, and, you know, since before the book, about why some women set big goals and chase after them, chase them down and achieve them, really, versus others who get caught in the dust of their to-do lists. And I don't think we're all that different. And in fact, I've sat on both sides of that table because after we sold the business, I really did struggle. Even though I had done big things, I could not see big things that were next for me at that time. And I was afraid of failing. And it really froze me. And so I really started to examine why it happens and why some people can just do these amazing things. And of course, you know, we see the accomplishment, not the journey and the struggle along the way.
That's so true. And so these days, your great work is related to Big Gorgeous Goals, which is the name of your book.
It really is. And, you know, a byproduct of that, I think that has come into play is really this whole idea about women entrepreneurs. And, you know, 2.9% of venture capital goes to women. 2% of businesses started by women ever grow to be more than $1 million in revenue. Only 2%.
That's crazy.
And, you know, in my
2% of 2.9%. So it's like actually even smaller than 2%.
Infinitesimal, yeah. And I really feel like we owe it to ourselves to chase our big, gorgeous goals, to step into our magnificence, to do our great work. And in order for us to do those things, we need to see other people in the world that are doing it. I think it really helps. And so, you know, I've also really become interested in telling stories of the women that I meet who are doing amazing things in businesses you would never have imagined.
Yeah. And I love your book for that reason, because it's not just your story, which of course is amazing and so inspiring, but also all these other women entrepreneurs who have done really amazing things in the book. And then also you have this podcast, which is now like 2 years old or something, right? Your podcast?
We're coming up to 50 episodes. I'm really excited about that milestone. And I have met so many really interesting women doing all kinds of different things in the world. And I'm in conversation. It's called Figure Eight. I'm in conversation with women with 7, 8, and 9-figure revenue businesses. And what their journey, what's been unique about their journey? What's been, you know, what are the little hooks of the story that are different for them? And I mean, I've spoken to women who have taken over business from family by purchasing it, women who've purchased businesses from strangers, women who've started those businesses from scratch. And it's so interesting all the ways we can come to entrepreneurship.
Yeah. And then make something amazing. I think there's something, there's like similarities in those people and also just remarkable, interesting, different. I really enjoy your podcast, actually.
Oh, thank you.
And I'll put a link to it in the show notes so other people can listen to it too. So one of the similarities that we've talked about a little bit in what we see in successful entrepreneurs, whether they're six-figure entrepreneurs who are the people that I tend to work with, or seven. Someday I'll be a seven-figure entrepreneur.
Yes, you will.
Eight. And then I think like nine figures blows my mind so completely. Like, And so what are some of the things that you see as commonalities in the people who, like you said at the beginning, are able to really chase their big, gorgeous goals at whatever level they're at that time?
Yeah. The commonalities that I see, no matter how people come to it, are, you know, systems, processes, and people. And, you know, some of the systems are related to the business itself. Some of them are related to like elevating their own leadership as they grow. Because I think no entrepreneur starts a business on day one and says, I'm going to have 100 people reporting to me one day. And so there's a journey to that and becoming that leader that, you know, makes decisions and keeps the business moving and looks at all those parts and all the people. And sometimes, you know, some of those pieces can feel exhausting. And so I think it's, you know, systemizing, but also the idea that you have to let go of a lot of things. You have to trust other people and allow other people to do work, good work for you that you manage and direct. And that's a big piece of the journey for everybody.
Yeah. And that's a great segue, actually, because that is the chapter that's being added to Great Work, is a chapter on collaboration. And I started out writing that chapter and I felt like such an imposter. I had straight up imposter syndrome about it. I was like, what am I doing writing this chapter about collaboration? I struggle so much with it that that became the frame of the chapter. It's like, I'm a pretty serious lone wolf. I kind of do it myself. I feel like the work I could do is good and fast and careful. And it has been a journey for me to do what you just described, which is to trust other people, offload some of it, rely on their genius. And I really feel like our work together as friends and masterminds and accountability has helped me a lot with that. And also listening to your stories about building a team and the struggle has really normalized it for me. So let's talk about like collaboration as a topic. Like, why is it so important if you're trying to grow beyond, you know, what maybe came naturally just through your individual effort?
Well, you get caught in work that isn't important. And it's funny, I was talking with an entrepreneur last night who was struggling with follow-up pieces. And I was like, well, you need to hire somebody for that. Like somebody who's just going to systemize and follow up and hit all the little drop balls that you're doing. And no, you're not dropping the big important balls, but you're dropping all these small ones. We all are constantly because, you know, when you're working on your own and you have to do everything, like, let's face it, nobody's good at everything. Right. I have a very strong sense of what I'm good at and what I struggle with. And when I left, you know, Mabel's Labels, I had a pretty big team. I was really directing and managing. That was where I spent my time. I would go to meetings, help make decisions, direct, manage the work, make sure that we were on track. And, you know, you kind of like keep the rhythm, like you beat the drum, you keep the rhythm for people, you make sure that, you know, things unfold as they need to. Whereas when I started this business, like I do everything, every single thing, like, and you know, that feeling of like, what am I going to learn today? Okay, here it is different because it's like at this level of doing, not at a level of leading. And so I think that, you know, as a solopreneur, then when you start to need to have other people, a couple of things can happen. Like one of them is you're moving so fast, you don't have the time, I use air quotes on that one, to train somebody properly. And so you're running around a little bit like, you know, a little like a chicken. And the person who's working for you is like, but I need information. I need information. I need information. And it takes time, right? So I noticed that about myself when I hired the VA that I work with now. And it took us, you know, now we're like more than 18 months in and it is smooth and I don't have to say a lot. And she knows what my business needs and what her role in it is. But in the beginning, it was a struggle for me to pause because I felt like I was so busy. I waited too long to hire her, probably. And so I think, you know, that, but it's a really important. And so that's where like you get into these zones where you're like, oh, I'll just do it myself. It's so much easier. Yeah. And that's actually probably the worst thing you can do because you can't scale up when you're the roadblock.
Well, that's a t-shirt right there. Can't scale up if you're the roadblock. Oh, so yeah. True. Yeah, that is true. So when we start delegating things, we both hopefully in the beginning, what's so hard about it is that at first you think I'm going to clear up time for myself. I'm going to make myself some time by giving this job to someone else. And it takes just as long to work with them to get it. It's like, it really is a longer term. And one of the things I think that happens with people who maybe are solopreneurs that it's like, it's such a short-term thinking. You don't even know you're doing short-term thinking, but maybe you kind of just started your business. Now, the Great Work Empire is coming up on a 10-year anniversary next year or next month, like in one.
That's amazing.
Like 2 weeks or something is the actual date. So I should know better by now. But a lot of people are thinking like, I'm just getting this started. Like it's easy to say, let me just wait until I'm ready. But it's like, it's the chicken and the egg, just to bring it back to chickens. Like, ready till you're
you really can chicken and egg it, and sooner or later you've got to just plunge. I mean, you just have to, because otherwise you're just going to be stuck.
And
I see that, you know, with decision making, like when you start to struggle to make decisions, you get stuck, right? And it's that same kind of stuck where like you're, you know, by delaying or deferring doing something, making the decision, you are kind of making a decision. You're making a decision to do nothing.
Right.
Your inertia is holding yourself in nothing, which means you're not moving forward in any way.
Right. You're just sitting there spinning your wheels. Yes. Yeah. So true. You're describing so much of my life. And I feel like it's interesting because it's like you have to have the courage to believe, you know, like that this business is still going to be here in a year. Now, when you're, you know, I definitely know my business is going to be here in a year. We're 10 years in. When you're in your first year, you're just having the courage to believe in the next client, the next project, the next. And so there does come a point where often when clients are reaching the first time they're reaching that experience you're describing where they're like, I'm barely certain, like it really feels like you're drowning.
Yes.
You know, you're like, who can I disappoint? And then the only person you can disappoint is yourself. And then inevitably there's some kind of either full scale burnout or the very first start of like, I'm getting sick. I'm not, I haven't been to the gym in forever. Yes. Yeah.
And that is not a sustainable anything for the long term. Right. And so that's where, you know, when we come out and we try and build businesses, we need to build something that we can be healthy and survive and thrive in, right? I mean, we didn't do this to burn ourselves out.
Right.
But it's easy to have it happen. And I think then on the other side, like when you start hiring people, figuring out what your mechanisms are. Like I used to talk with people who I hired to work for me a lot about, you know, your probation period, the first 90 days that you work for me. Here's your plan, you know, 30-day deliverables, 60-day deliverables. Here's how we're going to know at 90 days, the red light or the green light. And, you know, part of that 30 and 60 and 90-day stuff was about them building the trust bank account. Because you need to be able to find that trust for the people that you work with, right? And when you're hiring somebody to work with you, you need to hire a professional, you need to have confidence in them, and you need to trust that they will do their job.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the points in the chapter that, so the way that I wrote the chapter was I went and talked to a person that I know who was a lot like me when we first met, like it was like maybe 7 years ago now. And she built a really great nonprofit with a person who she was just really lucky that the first person who really wanted to help her was really great at helping her. And then over time, like they worked through all the levels of collaboration, which are like delegation, joining forces, team of experts, which is like, which you've experienced at Mabel's Labels, where when you get a group of people who are really great at what they do, like really impossible things become possible. And then innovation and unleashing are the levels. And I remember thinking like how great it must have felt for her to have that first realization that there are actual experts who want to work with you. But what happened, I think, at first was she was trying to bring people in. And I did this too, who were very, very junior, just getting started because they were inexpensive. And yes. I remember having a conversation with her where it's like, we have to stop doing this because we're just reinforcing our worst fears. We're hiring people who don't know what they're doing. We don't know how to do it any better than they're doing it. And then we're just convincing ourselves that what we could do would be better, as opposed to hiring the most expert person that you can afford.
I think it's one of the hardest things about your first hires as a business is the people, because you need everything, you know, you need your Swiss Army knife, right? You need the Swiss Army knife. That's what that employee looks like. So, you know, they can do anything and everything you need them to. They have a lot of intrinsic motivation. They can also see what needs to be done and just go and do it. But like one of the things I also learned on the journey is that when you then have a company of 20 or 30 people, that those early hires sometimes don't fit in because you over time narrow down the role, give them a more formal job description. Maybe they're so good at something you make them a leader and really they shouldn't be leading people there are hard journeys in entrepreneurship for sure. But I do think that when you're really small and you're hiring that first person, like, you do need somebody who can do a lot of stuff.
And I think you said the intrinsic motivation is an important part too. You really need somebody who's like very, it's hard to find because in this marketplace, you look for a VA, right? And they're very transactional, most of them. It's like, tell me exactly what to do and I'll do it. And I have five other clients and it needs to be very systematic. That's all very understandable. But there's something so magical about somebody who's like, I really loved your book. I really love the work that you're doing. I believe in what you're doing. I want to help you. And I think it's worth finding somebody who feels that way, especially when it's the one and only person that you might be paying to help you
on
with
your team. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's hard to find, I think.
Yeah.
How do you do that, Julie? How do you find that person?
I often reach into my network and look for recommendations to find that person. I interview them and see if we have a fit. And then we usually do some kind of a trial. And then I usually go through a cycle because I hired a second person to do work for me and help me this year. And I went through a cycle of like, I'm the problem, it's me. Where,
Taylor
you know,
Swift era.
Total. I was in the era of realizing I was the problem. And, you know, because I had work she was doing for me, but we were passing it back and forth.
Yeah.
And eventually I said, you know, if I trust her to do this work, why am I involved? Why am I inserting myself in the middle? Because then what happens is then they're waiting for me, waiting a day, waiting 2 days, waiting 3 days, because I'm busy off doing other things.
Yep.
And I'm not paying attention to those details. So why did I hire somebody to take care of the details if I'm not going to let them? And so eventually I was like, I think I need to step out of this. I think you have it. I think you're doing a great job. And I think you need to own it, you know? And so even for me, somebody who's managed a lot of people at this point in my career, finds myself in this business that I have now, you know, embracing some bad habits.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason there's something about Mabel's Labels wasn't julieellis.ca, right? It's like when it is your name on it in that way, Amanda Crowell companies. And it's like me and my book and like my coaching clients and my relationships. I'm protective of it. I want, you know, I really, really feel personally responsible for it. So I've heard somebody say, maybe it was you. Was this you? Who said, if you can think of your business, even if it is your name, as its own thing, you can make better decisions about it. Were you the person who's telling me that?
I don't know if I was, but I believe it's true. The other thing I believe is that if you hire people who believe in what you're doing, they may not do it exactly like you would, but they're also not out to mess it all up. Like they're not. And so, you know, so is it better for things to be done or is it better to be done to, you know, And I think those are like, those are some of the little leadership decisions that you make along the way of about letting go of things.
Yeah, right. I love the distinction between better and different. That was really important for me the first time I started working with a virtual assistant who was quite good at what she was doing. She was actually, now I cannot afford to work with her. She was actually a virtual assistant first. Then she was just a graphic designer. Now she's like one of these premier graphic designers. Heather is her name. Heather Terwilliger. I'll put her link in there because she's great.
Amazing.
She is. Yes. You know her. But I remember thinking, I feel like that could be different, and having a conversation with her about, like, is it better or is it different? And me letting go of, like, I wonder if this or this, she's like, you got to let it go. Unless it's going to be way better, just let it be. And that was a big moment, because you can make a mountain out of any molehill when you're nervous, you know, and you're a perfectionist and it needs to be right.
Well, and it's like this sorting, like, does your book title need to be right? Yes. Yeah. Does the podcast title that you put out, you know, week after week and month after month, it's not as important, quite frankly, like it just isn't. So how do you then, like, level yourself into the work that you should be doing? And in any role, it's like that. Like, the examples we're using right now are about the jobs we're doing right now.
Yeah.
But it really is the same for anybody, right? Like, it's like, you know, it's a continuum of, you know, the things that are really important need to be done right. And so you need to either teach people really well or stay with a hand involved or whatever the case is. But you also have to be careful that you're not the, like, tree that fell on the train tracks and the train's going to crash into it and not keep going.
Yeah.
Right. So there's that piece. But then there's, like, a million other things about your business that you actually don't even need to decide, know about, or do.
Yes. What a relief that would be. I remember working on a team for my dissertation that was a very small team that I was fully, I mean, possibly micromanaging. This was, you know, when I was getting my PhD, which is like a solid 15 years ago now. And then moving to a postdoc where the team was across 3 universities and 25 research staff, and being just blown away by how many things were happening without me having any role in them. IRB, meeting schedules, agendas, food was ordered. Like, I was like, this is the most amazing thing. And being so relieved. And what a great feeling that would be to have, like, on my own business.
I think it's so interesting, though, because I think when you hold on to all those things, like, the more you micromanage, the more stressful it actually is. And you think it's going to be stressful to let go.
Yeah.
But it's actually the letting go that releases the stress.
Yes. Yes. And, like, if you hire people who are experts, which you should as much as you can.
Yep.
No, I've never met it. Have you ever met an expert who wants to be micromanaged?
No. Well, and there's a real truth that if you are a micromanager, you will not keep your best people.
That's right. Because eventually they just are like, I know what I'm doing. I don't need you making me feel like this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a friction. It feels like you're grinding all the time. And I mean, sometimes it can be because it's not the right fit, the person you hired. So when you feel that, sometimes it's that you're the problem, right? I mean, you've got to kind of figure that out, because, and you've got to figure out, like, what's the worst case scenario if you just let go and let them do it?
Right.
You know, and sometimes that worst case scenario is that you really kind of can't let go and let them do it. And so then you have a different sort of set of things to navigate. But oftentimes it's like, oh, nothing, you know, nothing that can't be fixed is going to happen.
Yeah. And I think, like, that feeling of can't be fixed, right? Nothing that can't be fixed. It's like, we also, I think, when we're coming from a sort of black or white thinking place, like this, you know, it's my business, I have to do everything or nothing. Like, there's this middle ground that comes to, it, like, emerges from the experience, and you realize there's a long term here, right? Like, we're going to have a relationship and negotiate it, and something's going to go wrong and we're going to fix it. And then you're going to know those things about that when you work with somebody. And that's also a reality. It's not going to be perfect right away. It's not going to be easy right away.
No.
But you definitely want to work with people that eventually you can trust to just do it. So,
yeah. I think that delegation and, like, there's a lot of things. So I think about a team that I coached where there were struggles in decision-making and there had been kind of a command and control leadership in place for some amount of time. And then, you know,
is command and control, another word for micromanaging,
is, and I'll tell you what to do and you'll do it. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of, you know, and they were really trying to move to more of a culture of accountability.
Okay.
And so, you know, they were working with me to help coach the leaders in that transition. And we had a lot of conversations about, like, you can't go from telling people what to do in every single part of their job to complete freedom and decision-making.
Right.
So, and I feel like we often do this, right? Like you hire a new person and you're like, here, go do this. And they're like, but I don't know. And you know what, so what was the, you know, so go away, you go from telling you what to do to go away and research and bring me four options and we'll talk them through and decide. Mm-hmm. Then you go through, you know, then you make some success there. Then the next step is, okay, go away, research the four options and bring me your recommendation. Mm-hmm. Go away, research the options, make the decision. Like, you know, like there has to be a gradual
release of responsibility.
Yeah. And maybe you don't need every step. Maybe they will fly and it will be easy, you know, easier as you go. But mm-hmm. like you have to think about, and I think those are the things about leading and having a team that like that no one ever teaches you. Yeah. No one teaches you how to put frameworks in place to help people step through all of those things. It's just like, oh, you're a manager. Well, mm-hmm. how do you make decisions and delegate work so that you know, 3 weeks later, what comes back to you, you're like, oh, I should have done it myself. Cause that's not the answer.
So, well, about not, no one teaches you how to put frameworks in place. So I think that's a really important thing. And actually one of the things I like about your book and your workbook that's coming out actually, because, well, just so people know, tell us about your workbook, Julie.
Okay. So the Big Gorgeous Goals official workbook is coming on May 22nd. And I got so many people who asked me, how? Mm-hmm. How do I do it? Do you use a specific process? What are the different ways? And so it kind of came around. And then the book coach, AJ Harper, who we both work with, came out with everyone should have an official workbook to go with their book. And I was like, this is what people are asking for, actually. Mm-hmm. And so the workbook takes the book down into two sections. The first part is really based on the first three chapters, and it really gives people a framework. It gives the framework I use for setting my big, gorgeous goals. So how to set them, how to kind of do your quarterly check-ins and your annual review. The second part of the workbook is based on the remaining chapters of the book. And really walks people through worksheets for decision making.
Mm-hmm. Frameworks.
Different kinds of decision. Yeah, all of the frameworks that, you know, they might not be exactly the ones that work for you, but they give you ideas mm-hmm. and they let you then try some things, see what works, and build things that will help you in leadership to, you know, keep things moving down the path.
Yeah, I really like that. I have taken a close look at your workbook, which we'll talk about. In a second, I'd like to talk about like how we provide sort of, even when you're not working with someone specifically, just doing accountability and stuff, like the kind of stuff we do. But I really like your workbook because sometimes I feel like it's like the idea makes sense to me. Oh, I should have a process for checking in on my quarterly like income goals and things like that. But then it's time to do it. And I'm like, yeah, but what does that actually mean? I feel like they're like actually having those examples in your workbook's really super helpful. So people should go snag that immediately.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, that would be great. It's available on Amazon.
So yeah, we'll put a link
easy to find. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of ultimately the workbook kind of reflects me mm-hmm. in terms of how I think is I like to think big, but I know that I need structures and frameworks to help mm-hmm. me achieve big. And so I think, you know, it's this mix of like reach for the stars and here's the practical underpinnings that go with it. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's very much who I am as a person.
I agree with that. Yes. You're always the person that I come to where I'm like, okay, I'm actually, I think maybe like too often really strategically minded. Like I see a big picture. I see a lot of opportunities. I'm pretty good at getting things done. I do it well. I did it fast, but there's this space in the middle where I can get tripped up, where I need somebody who's like, how about just make a decision and go? And I'm like, oh, and that's always you. I can remember, think of a million times where I'm like, I could do this or I could do that. And I just can't. And you're just like, well, and you ask just the right question of like, which one of these actually, if it waits, doesn't, it actually has more tolerance for waiting. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, okay. And then I'm like, oh, back to the races. I feel mm-hmm. like that's a having that friend. Even if they don't work with you, you don't pay them money, they never pay you money, but like they're just that accountability kind of, they know enough about your work to be really helpful, but they're just there to help you keep moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's important to have for anybody, especially if they work on their own. And honestly, maybe I'll even rephrase that to, as an entrepreneur, you almost always work on your own. Mm-hmm. Because maybe in the early days of building a team, you make decisions at a table together, but there comes a point where you have to do it alone again, where you have to show up as the leader with the decision made and the direction to give out. And so I think you have to find the sounding boards and the people who help you when you need to keep moving.
Yeah. And what have you found? Like, what are the types of sounding boards, or like, what are the types of things that you like having support from, you know, like support for you as the entrepreneur, mm-hmm. not the business, but you?
Yeah. I like having some kind of peer support. So mastermind, whether it's a formal mastermind or, you know, just colleague, other entrepreneur colleagues that you can be like, hey, you've done this, or have you done this, or how did you navigate, or do you have any thoughts for me? Somebody who, you know, is kind of in your circle confidentially. Then I think also there's sort of the paid options of whether it's like a coach or an advisor to the business. And then there's mentoring and free options on that too, like someone you take out for dinner a couple of times a year and what they can offer you. And that might be a subject matter sometimes on a mentor. And sometimes it's just like somebody who's far ahead of you and who can sort of help you see the next steps on the ladder you need to climb.
Yeah, I like that. And I think like that space where it's like the peer-to-peer support and the coach piece of it is like, it's interesting because sometimes I've had many people ask me like, how do you be sure you don't overstep the boundaries of someone who's just supporting you as a peer and asking them to do too much or asking them to give you too much advice versus like, you don't want to pay your friends to be your friends. Like, how do you figure that out? And I know how I think about it in my mind, but I'm wondering, how do you think of that? Like, how do you make sure that those balances are kept?
Yeah.
You know, honoring the relationship.
Yeah. I feel like peers need to be a little bit in your orbit, right? So kind of where you're navigating some of the same problems. And because once you get where you're not at the same level, then I would call it more of a mentoring relationship than a peer relationship. And so like for me right now, although I have, you know, at Mabel's, I had about 20 people that reported to me at Mabel's, maybe not quite that many. And then I ran a business where I had 135 people reporting to me.
That's right.
So I've had big, big teams report to me. But in this business of what I'm doing right now, I could be a mentor to somebody who has a much smaller business because I've done these big things. But in my own business right now, what I am as a peer looks a little different. So I think like circumstances also change depending on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And frameworks, I think, are helpful even to navigate this sort of piece where it's like, if you have, So the way that we set it up is that every 2 weeks we have an hour long conversation. And that's helpful because it's like a half an hour and a half an hour. Use it however you want to use it. Sometimes it's boots on the ground where it's like, I need us to just look at this. Mm-hmm. And some of the most helpful parameters have been like where we're just like, this is what we're going to talk about. So you better be, you know, get your launch plan together so that now you really have to have a launch plan, or I'm struggling with this decision and I want to talk to you about it. And it's like, that means I have to get my head wrapped around that decision. Sometimes the decision just solves itself before we even talk. And sometimes I'm just really, really clear on it. And I wasn't before.
Right. And sometimes I feel like it's like, you know, you put it out as like, hey, at our next meeting, I want to talk about this. Mm-hmm. I have a decision I got to make about it. And then suddenly that actually makes you make the decision. Like you already know by the time you come, because you get things rolling.
Yeah.
But then there's other stuff too, where it's like, do you know an expert or have you done this before? Yeah. Or I feel like all of those things are really valuable in a peer relationship as well.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And I think it's just, sometimes all you really need in education, we call it making learning visible. Sometimes a kid does not know that they don't know something until they have to make it visible, like write it in homework is sort of a lame example, but projects or testing or whatever. And it's like the same thing is true for me. It's like until I have to articulate it or think about like what it is I'm going to share at the mastermind, like what do I need help with? I don't even realize I'm stuck.
Yeah.
That's the problem with doing everything in a bubble by yourself.
Yes. And it's where I'm a really firm believer in the power of the network. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I can help, if I know somebody who can help, if I can introduce, if I can, you know, or, you know, even just talk about like, how do you even find an expert? How do you find somebody? And I mean, I don't have all the answers. I'm not saying that, but I am a big believer in like, I have some of them.
Yep.
And if I meet more people, they'll have some of them and then I'll have more answers.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that we actually met in a group, AJ Harper's Writing Sprints group, which we'll also put a link to the chat. And we were the two people in the group writing the book who were not in her workshop.
Yeah.
Which I always felt like an affinity with you. I was like, we're over here like writing this book, but we're sort of outsiders, but now totally insiders also.
Yep.
And that group is full of people with a few of the answers too. So the more, I think there's this tip in here, which is like, even if you don't feel like you're yet ready to hire somebody to help you in a formal way, although you're probably more ready than you think you are, as we previously discussed, putting yourself in these communities where there are people who know things, first of all, you'll realize you didn't even know you had that question. You didn't even know it was a question. Mm-hmm. And you'll have the start of an answer. It's just, first of all, it makes you feel so much less alone. And that matters too, because being an entrepreneur can be really lonely. And it surrounds you with the people with answers to questions when you do have them.
Yeah, it's so true. And I do think that, like, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Like, people have the answers.
Yeah.
There are enough things that are hard about what you're doing and the decisions you have to make and the figuring out directions and stuff that if you can rely on people to give you some answers, then it just makes it a lot easier. There's no point figuring it out on your own.
Right. Which to all the lone wolves out there like me is just a lesson we learn over and over again. It's like you fall back into an old habit. So if you're a lone wolf and you fall back into the habit of like, I'm just going to do it myself. Let this be like your sign from the universe. Go find some people. Join the writing group. Find a friend. Do a rehearsal group if you're a speaker. Like find the people who are also in that space too, without the expectation that they will help you, that you'll help each other.
Yes. And I think really think about the, like when the, I'm going to do this myself kicks in. I think about, how did I ask for this to be done? Where did we break down? What came back? Why am I feeling this way? You know, what's my responsibility in this? And, you know, if the wrong fit of a person that you hired is there, that happens.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, first point the fingers back at yourself and have a really good look at whether you could have done something differently to get a different outcome.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Right. And I remember, maybe it's in your book, or maybe it's just in a conversation that we had, you said, and when you try to do it all yourself, you're choosing to keep your work small.
Yeah.
And that really hit me.
That's the thing, right? I mean, it, you know, when you want to grow your work, grow your message, grow all the things, you need people to help you.
Yeah. You have to find your people. So find the people who you can give some of your work to and figure out how to do that. Find the people who you can have peer-to-peer relationships with and have the courage to just ask for that. And find the people who inspire you and surround yourself with them as much as possible.
Yeah, and let your great work expand, right? Because really, that's what I think is so in common between your work and mine is this idea of expansion, right?
Yeah.
We want to expand to our big, gorgeous goals, to our great work. And it's really about like, you don't want to be sitting where you are in 5 years. So you've got to bring people onto the team to keep growing the word.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting because your great work expand to a big, gorgeous goal. It's like some people might look, one of the things I really like about you that I think is worth pointing out is our work is pretty similar. I mean, you really work with people who have much bigger businesses than the, you know, than, and I'm just talking about the, not just, I'm talking about the sort of notion of having great work and making the space for yourself as a person to do it. So in some ways, they're synergistic, not competitive at all. And in fact, I don't think of them competitively at all. But other people have said to me previously, like, why do you do so much work with somebody whose work is so close to yours? And I'm like, the question didn't even compute. But I do think like, that's another thing that you can do is like not, you have the choice, right? To think of the world as a place full of competition or a place mm-hmm. full of synergy and collaboration. One thing I like about our friendship and the work that we've done together is that I've never seen it that way.
No, I don't see it that way either. In fact, I see it more like, I know I'm not going to be for everyone. I'm not the, you know, there are many people in the world, and my approach and my method is not for everyone, mm-hmm. and nor is yours. And so, you know, I think it's one of those things where it's an all boats rising for me, really. Like, the more people you collaborate with and the more you put the work out into the world, the better everybody does.
Yeah. And that's an important point too, because I do think there are some people who are just afraid. If I go into this writing group, will somebody steal my idea? If we talked to AJ Harper about that in the last episode of the podcast, where it's like, if you think you have only one idea, then you're kind of protective of it. But if you recognize there's an abundance of ideas, you want to be in relationship with people who are passionate about the same things.
Yeah. And I think that the thing about ideas is that even if we have the same idea, which we're going to approach it totally differently. Your training as a psychologist is really different than the training I have as, you know, coming out of finance and being an entrepreneur and all of those pieces. Like, we have different views and different experiences that are going to lead us to shape that idea differently.
Of course.
You know, that's where people are like, well, there are no new ideas. And I kind of get that, because I think it's all about, but the world needs to hear your version, needs to hear your take. And so that's what I think is important, is for us to put our own, you know, lens on it and our own way of thinking about it. And that will land with some of the people.
Yeah. And a lot of people will like both versions of it. You need to hear it a few different ways before. Yeah. If it's a good idea, then we need voices saying, yes, yes, more of that, more of that.
Yeah. So that it can crystallize. I know I can see that in myself. I often need, you know, to hear different people's opinions or lenses on a topic so that I can crystallize my own thoughts.
Yeah. So the truth is, we need people in all these different ways.
We do. And I'm so glad to have you in my life to collaborate
with. Samesies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast. You should read Big Gorgeous Goals. I think it's true, Julie. Am I correct that if people get the workbook from your website, they get a copy of Big Gorgeous Goals with it?
They do. And they can keep that for themselves. Or if they happen to already have the book, they can share it with a friend.
Yes. So that's the deal of the century. Go to her website, get that. And Big Gorgeous Goals and Great Work are book twins again, sort of, because yours comes out on May 22nd. And then my new edition of Great Work comes out June 10th. So we're over here supporting each other through a launch, which is just like, that's what it's about. I want people to read the book. I want people to be changed by the book. But I also just love being surrounded by people who are supporting me in my great work. And I'm supporting them with their big, gorgeous goals. And so this podcast episode is really to encourage you to go seek that out. Have the courage. Build the connections, because it's worth it.
Yep, definitely worth it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Unleashing Your Great Work. If this episode sparked something for you, you'll love the Great Work audiobook, narrated by me and now available on Audible. It's the perfect way to go deeper while you walk, drive, or just take a breath. Search Great Work by Amanda Crowell on Audible or grab the link from the show notes below. And if you're enjoying this show, follow it, rate it, and review it. It really helps more people find their great work.